The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired Podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
Hello and welcome to Procedurally Generated. I'm Henry Bell, and joining me in studio today are Tom Schreier and Brandon Bowling. I'm feeling much better this week, which is good, because we have a ton of stories to cover, and I'm going to need my voice. Let's get things rolling with the brand new text-based game that has come out this week about waiting for an Overwatch beta invite. I love this. I think this is wonderful on every level. So we all know that when Overwatch is coming out in May, and we're all eagerly anticipating the open beta that they're going to be doing. But in the meantime, a lot of us, me included, are still desperately hoping that that magical present of a beta key is going to just show up in our inbox in the next wave of beta invites. Well, Dark Dust number 6214 has created Overwatch Beta the RPG, a text-based adventure about basically waiting for your beta invite and doing tiny little tweaky things like participating in the community and stuff in order to increase your chance of being chosen. And I think the general moral is you don't get chosen. It looks like a lot of fun. It features like items, money, equipment, and quests. But it's also a time management thing, because even checking your inbox and doing your job will increase your saltiness level as you don't get it. I think this is amazing. Like, I love this.
Is this, I mean, this is a good sign for Overwatch too, that there's this many people anticipating, right?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, Overwatch is pretty much destined to be in the top three games of the year for this year, I'm going to say. I mean, I played the open beta from last year, and I have been thinking about it ever since. I tell Brandon all the time, like, oh man, like, nothing feels the same as Overwatch. I miss it. I want it. I've been trying to play Dirty Bomb to sort of scratch the itch, and it just does not compare.
Do you think they'll give a shout out to this? I mean, are there things in there that you could reference in a game, like as a one-off or something, to give a shout out?
What, like an Easter egg?
Yeah, like an Easter egg or some text. Yes, exactly. Some text in the game that would reference.
Yeah, they totally could. I don't know. And Blizzard is actually pretty well known for doing that. There are a lot of examples of, you know, ex-Blizzard employees or well-known players who have made their way into like World of Warcraft as NPCs and stuff, and they've always been pretty tongue-in-cheek and full of Easter eggs. I remember when I was playing way back in the day, the Burning Crusade, there was a vendor you could talk to in Achindoan. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that, but he was Slim, the shady dealer. Huh. Which I thought was good. And they have a lot of stuff like that. Like, you guys know the Hearthstone expansion, Harrison Jones.
Yeah.
It's Harrison Ford and Indiana Jones. They do a lot of that tongue-in-cheek crossover type stuff. So I wouldn't be that surprised, although I don't know how much attention it's getting. I will say this. I would be surprised if he doesn't get a beta key soon if they get wind of it. And I think that's probably what this was really all about.
Why do they have beta keys? What's the risk, I guess, in having like a open beta?
I mean, it's the number of players, the server load. Sometimes you're testing more minor things, so you want a more experienced community. I don't know. There's a whole variety of reasons to do it. Usually, the open betas are more stress tests and stuff, because otherwise you're giving away your game for free.
Right.
So being a beta tester is something, especially with Blizzard, that you kind of get a rapport with them for. So, like, if you've beta tested other games of theirs in the past, then you're more likely to get a key and stuff like that. So that increases community participation and stuff. But overall, I think it's just to keep the servers under load and stuff, and also to have it be a manageable player base that's fairly active. Because, it's important that the people who receive keys actually use them, you know?
Makes sense.
It looks like a lot of fun. I'm probably going to mess around with it. But yeah, if you want to see the text-based game, just go ahead and search for Overwatch Beta : the RPG. And again, Dark Rust number 6214 is the author of that. Pretty awesome. I think this is great. I love these kinds of community projects. Next up in the news, we have two Mario Maker stories. So first up, we've got there have been some updates to the game, specifically to the 100 Mario Challenge. So this is the mode in which I still haven't played extensively played Mario Maker since I don't own a Nintendo console. I wish John was here to chat with us about it, but next week perhaps. But the idea behind the 100 Mario Challenge, as I understand it, is you have to do a certain number of levels, and you have, I think, 100 lives to complete them. I'm not sure if it's 100 levels or not. I could not say. However, they are random levels from the community, and they range from basically difficult to it's expert to super expert is their terminology. And so they've segregated 100 Mario Challenge into an expert mode and just the regular 100 Mario Challenge. And yeah, I'm sorry, into expert and then super expert. And they are actually segregating the maps now. So you are not going to get super expert difficulty maps in the expert mode. My goodness. So that's pretty cool and a pretty big deal, because one of the issues with the 100 Mario mode is that, or 100 Mario Challenge, is that it, since it serves you random maps, you can get like really cheesy, kind of lame maps like Death Trap maps or Kaizo type maps that you may not personally be into, but you want to get like, presumably you want to get the cred of being able to complete all these. And I think you unlock stuff as you are doing the challenge mode. So it's cool that they're kind of mixing it up and giving people a little bit more control and choice. So that's the good Mario news this week. The not-so-good Mario news is that a prominent Mario Maker speedrunner who goes by the handle, Grand Poo, is complaining that all of his Mario Maker levels have been removed completely. So... Nintendo, we've talked about this before, and we talked about it last week. They have a problem where they are automatically purging what they consider unpopular or inappropriate Mario Maker levels, and they're doing it in a way that basically screws you out of an appeal. So let's say you work for 5-6 hours on a Mario Maker level, you upload it. And then it gets a couple stars, a week passes, and then you go to check your level to see how many stars it's got, and it's just not there. Nintendo does not give you a reason why it was pulled. You cannot edit the pulled map and make changes to it and then re-upload it. You have to start completely from scratch. There's even issues in this article. They talk about how Nintendo, when their customer service was talking with this streamer, they said basically, he said, you know, is it possible that it's because Poo is in the name, even though that's part of my username, and you guys are, you know, you've said it's okay? And they said, well, look into it. And then they said, we don't think it is. And he said, well, what if you guys like just let me change the name, or if you change the name? And they said, oh, well, the way that the system works, you can't change the name once it's been submitted.
Which I think is kind of...
It's insane. I don't know what the hell they're doing with this stuff. I'm telling you, if they don't get this under wraps, it's going to kill the community, which is a crying shame, because Nintendo's not really well known for having huge online communities.
Why do they have to delete these? Is it a space and memory situation?
Not literally, although, I mean, practically, yes. It's more things like with the 100 Mario Challenge, 100 Mario Challenge, you're served random community maps. Well, if there are tons and tons of terrible maps up there, or troll maps, or like, you know, exploit type maps, they want to make sure that those are not being you know, pushed on people all the time. And also, exposure is a big issue with Mario Maker as well. So like, finding good maps can be very difficult when you have hundreds of thousands to look through.
Is there a rank system? Do you know?
There is. It's a star system. It's sort of like likes on Facebook.
Right.
But the frustrating thing is the stars are per map, and then they are added together for like your profile score or whatever.
Right. I saw that.
And if your map is removed, you lose all those stars, even though they were given by other players.
Yeah. And I feel like if they had a better thumbs up, thumbs down system, you'd just like, for these 100 Mario Challenge, what was it? You know, you you just would have to have a certain amount of thumbs up or something like that. I don't know.
Well, that would bring in some other difficult issues because we live in the era of streaming and also of YouTube.
Oh, good point. Good
where
point.
You could say, if you like my video, go and make sure you upvote this. Or maybe your rival is doing something and you say, hey, all my fans, go downvote this map.
Yeah,
so
that's fair.
It's probably fair. To prevent community abuse. They already have an issue similar to that where you can basically report anyone's map and say, if between 2 and 4 people report a map as like inappropriate or offensive, it will get pulled.
Yeah.
And there's not really any oversight on it. The problem being, like, you'd have to hire a full-time staff to even try to keep up with the number of submissions for this. Because keep in mind, there's kids who are 4 or 5 years old who are submitting stuff as well. And you have to balance it, too, with, like, are you going to delete every single map that's not designed by someone who's, like, an expert? Like, where do you draw the line? So it's a very complicated issue, and I'm not necessarily surprised that Nintendo, of all companies, would be dealing with something like this because they have history of issues with online connected products. But I don't know. This is getting kind of ridiculous, especially because like it sounds like this streamer, Grand Poo, is going to be basically out of luck, which is insane because one of the ways he gets exposure for his job is through their metal through their star system.
Which is a shame.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big shame because I know he's spent multiple times trying to figure it out, Grand Poo, and he's still SOL, I guess you could say, out of luck completely because he made all these maps and they took all of them down and now he's down to zero.
Yeah, and he can't even just edit them and resubmit them.
Why
he would have to remake them from scratch.
The worst
to get
part
them back
for me,
there.
Yeah, that was one thing is even if everything works, even if he could resubmit, it would. He said he put, plus 100 hours into it? Second of all, there's no guarantee that they wouldn't pull him down again.
Exactly. And one of the measures of if you do appeal a takedown is that they will look over your entire account and you're at risk of having multiple other levels pulled.
And the worst part for this in this case is that they called him after the fact that he requested an appeal, said that the appeal went through positively on his end, and then pulled that back and said, oh, no, wait.
Yeah, they obviously have internal communications issues as well. It's starting to seem like the Nintendo employees themselves don't know what their policies are on these maps.
Yeah, and that's really the shame.
Why can't you save these locally? I mean,
saved locally.
Okay, I'm just saying, like, for him, it'd be nice.
Saved locally, as I understand it.
So why does he have to start from scratch then?
Because you can't re-upload it if it has anything in common that was pulled. You have to, if he wanted to put that map back up online, he would have to literally say new map and replace every single block by hand again.
Gotcha. Except for one, maybe.
Right. So, craziness. That's nuts. I hope that Nintendo gets a handle on that stuff before it's too late. Next up, we got more update news. Destiny has its first real content update in several months, and I'm kind of happy to see it. It's pretty cool. So it's going to be offering new bounties, new quests, new mission, and also it sounds like they're going to be revitalizing some old raid-type content as well. Or fire team? I don't know what Destiny's terminology is. It sounds pretty cool. They're adding in a new system where you have – this is hard to explain as someone who doesn't play the game, but you play through these challenges that are the new mode of PoE. Brandon, help me out here.
Player versus enemy.
Thank you. Oh, wow. That's a weird – no, PvE. I said PoE. Never mind. Anyways, Bungie's adding a new mode called Challenge of the Elders. Which is supposedly kind of like a player versus environment Trials of Osiris. That's where you can get your new high-ranked gear with over 320 light. And when you play through the challenge, you get a scorecard called the Elder's Sigil. Then, based on your fire team's performance, you're given a total score. And when you hit certain goals, you're able to collect new rewards from the vendor, Varix. Which is neat, and it resets every week. So it sounds like a fun, kind of interesting way to sort of do daily/weekly content and keep people interested, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I know people are already complaining because getting level 320 light gear was pretty big grind towards the end of the expansion, and so they're, as with World of Warcraft, they're going to be kind of handing out some of that kind of stuff, and people are not super thrilled. it sounds like a lot of fun. There's a new strike that pits people against Malik, who is basically, he wants to take over from Oryx, and I don't know. It seems pretty cool that they are giving this patch, because I was under the impression that they were only going to be doing like Sparrow races and weird little mini events like that for the foreseeable future. So I'm just happy to see a little bit more life injected into this. Though, as Brandon mentioned to me before the show when we were talking about this story, I had forgotten pretty quickly how recently Taken King came out. Like, it's not even been a full year, and I had completely forgotten about that game. What are you guys' thoughts on the patch?
Yeah, I'm glad they're adding content. It doesn't help me a ton just because, like, I'm not anywhere near 300, let alone 335.
Oh, did you just stop playing?
Yeah. I just haven't, you know, like, I was feeling it for a little bit. I enjoyed playing it, you know, with friends. But the problem is people get so much farther ahead of you because my friends who play this, like, literally only play this game. Or
what
maybe
you mean
other.
Is the problem is that you are a filthy casual.
Yeah, no, exactly. And not only a filthy casual, but one who plays multiple different games, doesn't focus just on Destiny. So,
yeah, that's the problem. That's why I stopped playing. It's like, I need to diversify. You know, I have a backlog now because of Destiny.
Yeah.
I used to be current, but, oh, man, Destiny can be pretty consuming.
See, I don't get that, because even when at my height of playing World of Warcraft, like, once you hit max level, you do your dailies, and then you go play another game.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, it takes so long, right? I mean, I haven't gotten anywhere near 300.
Well, I don't know if what I was talking about isn't super relevant for you because you haven't hit max level yet.
Yeah, no, and so that's
usually when you hit max level in Destiny, then it's all about collecting the goodies, like the new guns and stuff, and then
right, which it is in World of Warcraft too. But isn't there like a daily limit to how much like progress you can efficiently make?
Yeah, each character has like you can do a daily every day. You can do your weekly Nightfalls. In weekly heroics.
Right, and then once you do those...
You're done, but then you have your bounties, which can be done basically... I think you get about 6 a day. The only problem is that when you get new loot, new weapons, you have to level them along
right,
with your armor.
Right,
and, that, and if you get exotic gear, before, it just took... I remember I spent a whole weekend just leveling one gun, and I still wasn't done.
Wow.
And that's... Yeah.
See, that's a bit too much of a time sink for
that's
me.
That, yeah, that's what I was saying. It's a time sump. Like, that's where it gets to the point. They've made great improvements to it. Like, they definitely got rid of like the damage multipliers, which is nice. It's just like, okay, you get it because it's an exotic. I'm like, thank gosh.
Right.
That's why I ended up stopped playing, because you got to a point in just leveling up and staying on top of your game was like intense grinding and repeat content. And then I was like, all right, you know what? And I actually didn't stop playing. I got burnt out.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of intense content, repeating things, and getting burnt out, let's talk about The Division for a little bit. So first things first, there is a pretty rough bug going on right now that's been reported across all platforms, wherein if you craft high-end backpacks, there is a chance that next time you log in, the backpack will disappear from your inventory. Then you'll log in again, and you can't get into your account. And apparently this has been affecting some players since as far back as like the 18th, so 6 days. So that's a pretty big deal.
God dang those backpacks.
Yeah, it's really interesting that something this huge could fall through the cracks. It's good. It should be okay because... Ubisoft has been especially quick to respond to player complaints about balance and stuff, as we've seen with some of their Dark Zone patches and stuff, which we'll be talking about shortly. But this is kind of crazy. Like, I can't imagine buying The Division as recently as it came out, having to take six straight days off against my will, basically just because of a ridiculous bug like this. I mean, this seems like a basic thing that they should be able to fix.
Yeah, and the funny thing is it's a backpack. I don't know. Maybe, like, you know what I mean? There's so much in there. There's guns and stuff. It's the backpack that keeps you out.
Not the inventory of the backpack, because the backpacks actually just determine the size of your inventory, but the items aren't literally stored in them. It's more likely that when the backpack disappears, your armor rating changes, and it's like an anti-trainer type thing where you're trying to prevent hackers from being able to play the game put the game in an offline mode, edit their character, and then go online with hacked inventory. So likely it's because they're failing some kind of basically a character audit that goes when you're first logging in that checks all your stats against the last time you logged in.
Makes sense. I don't know. It's a bummer, especially because how much time have you guys put into this game?
Well, neither of us is affected, but and it's for high-end backpacks, so really it sounds like it'd mostly be affecting people a little higher level than us. Brandon and I just got to level 20 over the weekend. Or 21, Brandon?
Yeah, we're at 21.
21 over the weekend.
You're probably going to polish it off by the end of this weekend.
Yeah, seems likely, especially since I'm taking a three-day weekend. We're just probably going to be playing quite a bit of this now that my voice has finally recovered.
Uh-oh.
Good God.
It's going to be real.
Yeah, I'm probably going to lose my voice all over again. But speaking of what we'll be playing this weekend, there's a big new patch that is out. Out? Yes. Out.
No, it's in.
Okay. there's a new patch that basically is making a bunch of little tweaks to give the game's end game a little bit more balance. So first off, they are removing farmable mini-bosses from the non-Dark Zone areas, as I understand. So basically, named enemies cannot be killed over and over for better loot, which is actually kind of a bummer, but I guess I understand where they're coming from. They don't want people to just be basically gearing super fast by just blowing through named enemies. And then also, they've made some changes to the Dark Zone. So now you can fast travel to Dark Zone checkpoints from outside the Dark Zone. That's a big one.
That's crazy.
You can also heal other players in the Dark Zone, which is pretty darn important. And also, they have made some changes to the way that going rogue works so that it might actually be worth doing for once, which is kind of cool. Oh, and you can get more Phoenix credits from endgame bosses in the Dark Zone, and they also increased the high-end item drop rate for said bosses. So hopefully that will give the Dark Zone the much-needed breath of fresh air, because that thing was stale when it launched. It felt half-baked a little bit to me, and Brandon and I haven't even bothered. We went once at level 9, and we're just kind of meh, and we're I guess we'll go back at 30.
It looks really fancy. I'll say that much.
I guess. I want to see what some of the other areas look like and see if they're a little bit more populated as you get higher level. But
yeah, I'm definitely intrigued to definitely play it. I just want to make sure that we stand a chance.
Right.
That's why we've been holding off a bit. So hopefully next week we'll have something for you guys there.
Definitely. Oh, and also along with those changes, they've also made quite a few tweaks and bug fixes to balance just basic skills, items, all that kind of stuff.
Yep. And including the updates for making the Dark Zone going rogue more an applicable option. I'm also interested in seeing
how you feel
about doing it.
I'd like to see it too, because I think it needs to be more rewarding to be rogue. And I think they should make it more rewarding too if you continue killing people when you're rogue.
Exactly.
Because you're resetting that timer, you know?
Yeah, so, when you get out, I remember looking at videos of people playing, and they get you get 600 credits.
Mm-hmm.
That's it?
Yeah, definitely.
You can't even buy an item with that at the vendor.
Right. So speaking of farming, we have our first player to reach max both Dark Zone rank and also level in the Division this
Yay.
Week. At 130 hours, the player Chaos3SK is the first person to hit max on everything. So 99 is the level cap for the Dark Zone, and that's the one that goes up and down when you get kills in the Dark Zone and do stuff, and then also goes down when you die. So it is a fluid level, so I'm assuming he probably was pretty close for a while there. But this is interesting bit of information just on the back of so many people dismissed this game as being really short. I understand that the story could theoretically be blitzed through in 10 hours, although I kind of have trouble believing that, because I'm not sure how you're getting the in-between levels, because you can't just do just story missions. Brandon can vouch for that. You have to do side missions and encounters.
Yeah, it's very... Well, first of all, encounters are a must, period, because mm-hmm. you can't flesh out your home base unless you do it. And then side missions are really good. You do two or three side missions, that'll jump you to the level to do the next mission.
Right.
Usually, missions are every other level.
Exactly, so. Which was my main point, is yeah. like the missions are, there's not a mission per level, and there's, I don't think, any missions that are like for the same level. And so mm-hmm. I feel like burning through that game really quickly would require maybe either going to certain missions underleveled or like trying to just do the math for the most efficient side missions to do. But I just think it's pretty cool that somebody, that it took this long for somebody to hit max level. Let me tell you that in World of Warcraft, it takes like usually like 12 to 20 hours when the new expansion launches for someone to hit max level right away. So this
awesome.
Is heartening. Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully they keep this role going, and when they have their next major expansion, it's going to be a task.
Yeah, I really hope so. I think that's what they, I mean, it's supposed to be spring of this year that the task launches, and spring is, color me crazy, but I feel like it's got to be coming out pretty soon here, right? Okay. When does spring on a business calendar officially end? I don't even know. Probably like June, July maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know, but
I think it's June.
I have a feeling that May and April are going to be very busy months for gamers between something like this, Doom, the Overwatch,
Mirror's Edge,
Mirror's
Dark
Edge.
Souls.
There's so many
Dark
games.
Souls
yeah,
3.
Dark Souls.
Like, I'm actually going to take the plunge and see if I can do it.
Oh,
I'm
interesting.
Super nervous.
Yeah, that'll be. Well, you played Bloodborne, so I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, but I got emotional once I got to the church district. With those giants.
I don't know what that is, but cool.
Basically, the enemies are terrifying.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Well, from what I've seen, it looks like actually Bloodborne has like maybe slightly better art direction than Dark Souls anyways, so maybe you'll be okay on that front. I think the big one is I'm really curious to see if they're going to continue to ramp up the difficulty, like, or if they're just going to keep it at the current plateau that it's at.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, no, actually, I'm being...
I know what you mean. No, not sarcastic, but you both are hotly anticipating the challenge and also dreading the infinite deaths.
Yeah, and the loss of souls.
No, my souls. Yes, that was the thing that got me. I played about, I'd say, maybe a third of the way through Dark Souls 2, but I just got too frustrated with, like, I restarted the game 3 times because I had too many situations where I had farmed enemies till they despawned, where they never come back again, and then I would like go to the next zone and get killed and all my souls would be gone. And I'm just like, you know what, I want to start over because I'm at a marked disadvantage now.
Yeah, you got to spend them when you get them, man.
Yeah. I know. I'm a hoarder. I'm the guy who plays Fallout and doesn't spend his perks until he's like at a crafting station that's going to require him to have a perk.
No, I understand. Like you're preaching to the choir, my friend.
It just I like to have that stuff in reserve, and
I love,
just beats that out of you.
Yeah, I know. I love having like, oh, I have an extra 20,000 souls. All right, I'll just hold on to these. And oh no,
right?
No, the worst part about Bloodborne is that like they'll give you a chance. And they'll just sit there and flaunt them right in front of you like, oh, you lost your souls. Here, come fight this enemy that's like 5 levels above you.
Wow. Yeah.
You sure you want them? You sure? So right here. Come on. You know you want it.
Right. And then you're trying to figure out, can I like just juke in there and then run back to a campfire just because, good God, if he kills me and I lose him forever, I'm going to throw the controller through
the window.
No, the
worst part is like when you get close and then that dude just... whips back.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, a lot of people question what type of gamer I am. Like, just listen in when I play Bloodborne. You'll find out what type of gamer I am.
A loud and very curseful one.
Yeah.
So that pretty much does it for the Destiny and apparently Bloodborne discussion.
Sorry, I just got off.
No, no problem at all. No problem at all. Next up, though, we have some news that's going to be maybe a bit of a bummer to you, Brandon. Sony has shut down Evolution Studios, the creators of Drive Club and MotorStorm, mm-hmm. which is a pretty big bummer. I mean, apparently they're not laying the entire staff off from what I understand. However, they have said, and I quote, "It is regrettable that this decision will lead to compulsory redundancies," which for those who don't know what that means, it means that they're going to have multiple people who would be doing the same job in the company, which also translates to someone is going to be getting laid off, which sucks. But the slight silver lining here is that it seems like Drive Club, which is still a game that's getting patches and stuff and has a VR version that's going to be coming out, I think, later this year. Maybe, I don't know if it has a release date, but they're working on a VR version as well. They are not canceling all development on it. It's going to be moving to an internal team at Sony for the rest of that, which is, you know, I don't know. What do you guys think about
that? That, to me, is a mixed bag, but, I mean, I'm glad they're keeping it alive. That's all I really have on that one. I love Sony, but I don't like their organizational structure on the inside.
This seems like sort of a bummer to me, but I can't decide because I'll be honest. So I'll be talking about this in more depth once we start talking about the games we played this week, because one of the things I've been playing is The Crew. And that's a game that I don't know that all the updates are necessarily beneficial. There's a lot of just like silly garbage updates that are, it's like you're being constantly spammed with DLC that I couldn't care less about. Like, I don't need the monster truck expansion, okay? So stop in the middle of my main missions bringing my map all the way to like Chicago or whatever and saying, this is the next thing you should check out. And then you drive there and get to the icon and it's like $5 or however much it is. And I find that infuriating, and that kind of post-release support I do not need. That's up there for me in frustrating DLC practices with, Dragon Age that had the what was it called, the something tower? You guys remember what I'm talking about?
What?
You'd go to your camp, and there was just a dude chilling there, and you'd be like, hey, guy, and he'd be like, I have a mission for you at like this magical tower you have to go to, and you're like, oh, sweet, and the quest gets added, and then he's like, it's DLC, Link to the Store, from your camp in the game.
This was in original Dragon Age?
Yep.
Hmm.
I remember it like it was yesterday. A Warden's Tower? Warden's Keep?
Oh, and it's possible I just got it because I got it like a special edition or something.
Yeah,
like
because
that.
I'm sure you bought like the season pass version or whatever, the game of the year. But I did not have it, which was a bit of a frustrating situation. Anyways, I don't want to get into DLC practices here. I mostly just wanted to talk about how not all post-launch support is always a good thing. But
exactly.
This is a real bummer. I'm sure a lot of people are really disappointed by this. I've heard that Drive Club in particular has gotten a lot better than its sort of rocky launch.
Yep, and it's also sad to see the developers of MotorStorm, which is one of my personal favorite racing games. It was fun. It was a great experience. It's sad to see that go.
Yeah, it really is, especially because wasn't there like some kind of MotorStorm thing in production?
Not that I was aware of.
Okay. Gotcha. Well, regardless, it's a shame. I never like to see studios closing.
Yeah.
It feels like maybe it's just because of the time of year, but it feels like maybe it was... It's like a business thing at the beginning of the year or something, because this is, what, the fourth studio closure we've discussed in a month? It just seems like there's been a lot lately. Also, I think that I'm just reading Patrick Klepek's article about this on Kotaku called Sony Shuts Down Drive Club Developer Evolution Studios, and he does have a statement alluding to the fact that they may have been planning to do a like HD re-release for PS4, and he's just lamenting how good would it have looked on PS4.
Yeah, because MotorStorm was... Henry, I know you're not too big on driving games, but
I'm getting a little bit more open.
You would have loved MotorStorm. That was just a nice
If it's anything like Burnout, I probably would love it.
Yeah, it's just the environments were changeable. Like, I remember, like, you had to... There was a lava map where you had to race through lava and you had to cool your engine down by driving through water. I mean, it was cool. It was just a fun game. And then, like, the best part, too, is, like, I used to always make the joke, I love mud plugging, because you would just literally drive through muddy gulches through races and just get dirty. It was just like, this is satisfying. I don't know why, but it's fun.
That's cool.
So, I mean, I'm going to miss that, because that's really kind of what, you know how you get a new console or build a new computer and there's a game that brings it to life for the first time? For
yeah,
you?
Definitely.
MotorStorm was that. For me, for PS3.
Nice.
So it's kind of a bit of an emotional experience. It's sad to see it go, but, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Happening. For sure. And that is a total bummer here. However, I'm going to need to make a quick break. Can you mark it?
Yep.
Hey, are you getting any feedback of sound coming in?
Not on my end. Why?
Guys, I think Because in the studio, I'm hearing like some serious music going down.
Oh.
Are you getting any feedback? Like bassy?
No, but I wonder if it's from the room behind you. Because there, it's no like studio, like the with the lights on. Because that's where he's recording. Or not recording. That's where he's on the air.
Oh yeah. I don't know. If it sounded like it was coming out from the left. Like it felt like it was almost coming through the door, the entrance. I just figured I'd note it because Henry kind of walked out. Looked like he walked out in a funk.
Yeah. No. I think I'm looking at that dial. There's no way it's being fed through there, but it's they play that music loud in that room.
Okay, so you've noticed. Okay, so you haven't noticed it in the recording then? Any type of bass increase on the low end?
No.
Yeah, because I can hear it through the headphones.
Huh.
Maybe I can feel it more. I don't know. But it's definitely like, okay, as long as you're not getting it. Yeah, but I'm so salty about that. They're closing that studio.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, because, like, Motor Storm is an awesome game. And Drive Club is, like, a beautifully flawed game.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I know someone who had Drive Club. These are all PlayStation only, though, right?
I believe so. I need to get the Silver Shroud costume in Fallout.
Yeah, no, so how does that work? I try to play it Tuesday
depending
night.
Depending on, like, your character, games have always been like that. Depending on, like, because it's technically faction gear, I would assume.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk more about it in this. Hey, Henry, you back?
Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, you're just about ready?
Yeah.
Brandon, do you want to bring up that thing about bass, though?
Oh, you mean, like...
Are you still hearing it?
No, I'm not.
What?
Oh, no, I don't hear it anymore.
Okay.
What's the question?
Oh, after you left, I noticed that they were playing some music loudly, and it felt like it was kind of bleeding into the room.
Oh, no, it should be fine. These are all soundproofed rooms.
Oh, okay.
All right. Sorry about that. Let's see. You want to make a mark now?
Yep.
All right, next up, we have just a little bit of a quick story on Fallout 4's Automatron DLC, which I've gotten my hands on, and I'll be talking about more shortly. However, in the meantime, I want everyone to know, and this includes you, Brandon, because you haven't started it yet, and this includes you, Tom, because neither of you. If you don't have the Silver Shroud costume, you may want to consider getting it. I didn't know this, but the Mechanist, the villain from the DLC, is apparently a character from the Silver Shroud radio show in the game. And so there is unique dialogue where you basically role play as Silver Shroud throughout the quests. And now I want to play through it again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's pretty amazing.
It's pretty beast.
Yeah, especially as someone who's beaten the DLC, I could see exactly where it would breathe a lot of life into it as well, which I'm happy about.
Yeah, I like life and breath.
Indeed. That's it for Fallout. I just wanted to mention that to people because I was not aware of that, and I would have completely missed it.
That's the beauty of Bethesda games.
Yeah, definitely. I love Bethesda.
Like, seriously, like, I did... I remember coming back to playing Fallout 3 like 3 times, and I'm just like, wait, what? When did this happen?
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, man. All right, anyway.
Well, however, as much as I love Bethesda, you know, they have a history of having issues with paid mods, as we know, with Steam. And you know who Steam owns, or Valve, rather? Dota 2. And guess what Dota 2 has introduced? Paid custom maps.
I was wondering if that was rhetorical.
No, sorry. I was just trying desperately to link these two stories together.
Okay, but let's bring it in.
So here's the deal. There's a new subscriber version of some... you can pay for 99 cents for a monthly, I want to say, subscription to the Dota 2 premium custom map thing. Basically, it gives you access to extra cosmetics and maps in-game. But everything is still available, apparently, for free. You just get additional stuff if you have this pass. Well, the first paid mod for Dota 2 has come under fire almost immediately because of clearly stolen assets, not just from other creators, but also, or not just from other like workshop creators, but also from Blizzard. So the game is apparently featuring icons from both the workshop and, like I said, Blizzard. And it was a huge kerfuffle for about a week there. However, the mod author has now come out and made a statement here. He says, oh, goodness. Well, I guess I should clarify. Before he made his apology, he came out and basically said, if it's been submitted to the workshop, then you've given up your rights to it or whatever, so I'm allowed to use it. And a bunch of people were like, no, you're definitely not. And cited Section 6D of the Steam Subscriber Agreement, which reads, with respect to workshop contributions, you represent and warrant that the workshop contribution was originally created by you, or with respect to a workshop contribution to which others contributed besides you, by you and other contributors, and in such case, that you have the right to submit such workshop contribution on behalf of those other contributors. Meaning, you have to have permission or have made it all yourself. And so he came back, and don't worry, this is not going to be nearly as bad legal jargon. He came back and said, I made a mistake in responding as if I knew what I was talking about without having an actual understanding of how it works. The truth is, you're right. The workshop art belongs to the artists. If this custom game is offering a game pass, it's not fair for hours of time put into drawing the amazing images that you see in game. So the following actions are being taken. Number one, I'm removing all unacceptable item icons from the game. Yada, yada, yada. Number two, I want to apologize to all the artists who I did not consult in using their amazing works. So he's just going to be putting basically blank placeholders into the game to replace any stolen assets. And they're going to try and roll them out on their own over time with actually locally developed stuff.
Dang.
Yeah, so what a kerfuffle. You know, this is why paid mods don't work. I'm sorry. I am 100% against paid mods. I'm for mod developers getting money for making mods, but the very way that modding works is piggybacking on each other's work. And it always has. I mean, for Christ's sake, Dota 2 wouldn't even exist if it weren't for the fact that multiple mod makers had been sharing resources and assets. It was a Warcraft 3 mod that had multiple developers. So, I mean, I don't know. What do you guys think about this?
I think you make a pretty solid point.
It's infuriating to me as someone who mods every single game I play. I just would worry because there's so many mods that are saying, thank you to XYZ for letting me use their assets. This is me taking over this abandoned mod that's super popular, but the mod maker doesn't do modding anymore. This is me. I mean, because bringing money into the equation, you're not going to want people to inherit your mod. You want to just get all the money that you can from it, presumably, which I wouldn't blame them in the least. It's going to be less conducive to working in groups because the cuts are going to be so much smaller. I don't know. I feel like bringing money into the equation
just kills.
Really hurts what is a very community-driven thing. Like, it's lack of greed is what drives modding to some extent, I feel. Like, it's because because it's such a community-driven thing, you're doing it for everyone else and yourself. You're not necessarily doing... It's a labor of love, not a job. Mm-hmm. That said, I'm not opposed to mod makers being able to turn a profit. I just don't know that this is the way to do it. I think it should be, if you have, you know, X number of downloads on your mod, you should just get a cut of the game sales or something like that from Valve because you're bringing more people to the game.
That makes sense to me. I don't know enough about mods to have a concrete opinion on this, but it makes sense. It seems like if you say people are taking over other people's work and that, I mean, is this a legal issue? Is that fair to characterize it that way?
With the assets? In this case, yes, it is a legal issue, pretty clear cut.
Yeah, and so I don't know. It does seem like they're trying to commercialize something that's near impossible to do that. But again, that's a very layman's opinion.
Sure. And I mean, I understand that one of the reasons that this is such a sticky situation is there's a lot of people who don't have a full understanding of how the mod community works. And they're like, I don't care. I'll pay for mods. I want them on console. I don't care. I'll pay for mods. I think mod makers should be able to make money. And it's like, well, it's not that black and white. There really is more to it. I don't know. It's hard to explain without expecting people to have a year or two of experience just in the modding community, just general stuff from reading descriptions and reading forums.
Let me just say this, maybe because you're coming from a perspective where you've modded so much. I've just from Henry's perspective, I've just gotten into the modding scene, like, very freshly. And let me tell you right now, it's a completely different animal. There's a lot more depth to just modding. It's not like, oh, I hit a button and it works. You know, there's a labor of love. There's people who are actively changing core mechanics of the game to make the mod more immersive your enjoyment. And all these things are happening, and they're not getting, like, a direct payment for it. So that just goes to show you, like, this isn't something that's being done for monetary or even specifically recognition. They're doing it because they like it. Like, oh, this would be awesome to put in the game.
Yes. Here's,
let's do it.
Here's a great example of why paid modding, in my opinion, would not work great. A good example of this being an issue would be armor and weapon keywords community resource pack, which is a Fallout 4 mod that is basically is a compatibility patch that makes it so that if you have multiple mods that are adding tons of guns and different things to the game, that they are properly sorted and organized. It also allows, I think it allows them to add some of the guns to leveled lists. This is not a mod that would do anything if you downloaded it standalone, as I understand it. The whole point of it is compatibility with multiple other mods. So how is this mod creator going to be able to profit if in a paid mod system? Or do I have to pay money? You know, would I theoretically, and we're talking, we're assuming here that this would be some kind similar to the Skyrim paid mod system, but how would someone like him be able to turn a profit? And then should he then have some kind of profit sharing with all of the people who have patches for his mod? It's you see where it gets just really sticky and confusing. I mean, I'm sure that there's simple solutions for some of this stuff, but some of it I think is on a case by case basis.
Yeah, and whenever you're talking about monetizing something, case by case becomes an issue.
Yeah, itself. It's impossible with something like the modding community. There's let me just check really quick how many Fallout 4 mods have been submitted now.
Oh boy.
Let's see.
Take a deep breath, Henry.
and keep in mind too that the official creation has not begun.
Creation kit has not come out yet.
Oh.
Wait, be careful. Beat deep breaths.
Unfortunately, I can't tell you guys because apparently Sorry. There was some kind of big news thing on the main Nexus Mods site that I have to click through, so bear with me for one more second here. Sorry. Here we go. All right. Fallout 4 currently has 8,949 mods and 57.45 million downloads.
Damn.
Of mods. So, yeah, I mean, and they haven't even released the construction set yet. And to give you an idea of how many that really is, that's 8,949 for Fallout 4. Fallout 3 has 14,198, which means Fallout 4 already has more than half as many mods as Fallout 3 did in its entire lifetime. And Fallout 4 is less than a year old.
What about New Vegas? Is that in there?
Yeah, New Vegas has 17,000 files.
Oh, my chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know where the real bread's buttered, or where your bread's really buttered, is Skyrim's got 46,500, and Oblivion even has 27,000.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
right back.
It's pretty crazy. So, I don't know. I just, I guess this is a much better way for them to implement paid mods, is with this kind of premium pass. I worry about with the slippery slope of it, but I think putting it in something like Dota 2, that it's not a change to a system, it's just, it's like the way the game works, is a much better way to do it than like with the Skyrim thing where they're like coming in on the back end and going, oh, we're going to monetize this stuff that you've literally been playing this game, for free in this game for years. So maybe if they do it when they're launching a game that doesn't have expectations, but I tell you what, they should still, paid mods should stay the hell away from my Bethesda games. Cause I would be heartbroken if that community died.
Makes sense.
All right, next up, this is just something I wanted to touch on really quick. If you have not seen the first Overwatch short, it is live, it is 8 minutes long, and it is amazing. I mean, it looks like Disney-quality CGI.
Well, Blizzard has always been like...
Yes, but this is like, this looks like a Pixar movie is what it is.
It really does.
And I'm just recommending that people check it out because it's great and it's fun and it's up there with like that first trailer for just being really, really endearing. I'm so excited for this game.
Just to say, like, did anybody see some of those Easter eggs?
Yeah, like Hearthstone on the computer. Yeah, that's the only one I caught. I heard there were a couple other.
That's the one I was going to brag to you about. You don't even play the game, so.
Yeah, I like this. I mean, it just... Honestly, when I first saw this story, before you put it in the outline, I was kind of like, whatever. You know, you'd have to be a big fan. I think even if you're not interested in the game, it's just really well done, and it's kind of a unique story and very well told. You're right. It reminded me of Pixar, the little shorts they do before their movies.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's all I really have to say about that. Just everybody remember, Overwatch Beta is going to be starting next month, I believe, and it launches, I want to say, in May. I should know this stuff. I think May 22nd. Yeah, check it out.
Watch the trailer.
Next up, game trailers, who we talked about recently, how they had shut their doors. The staff is back with a new site.
Better and stronger than before.
Yes, I hope so. The name of their new group is, oh my goodness, Easy Allies?
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah. So it's, yes, Easy Allies is the new team name. So it's great news for a lot of these guys who were kind of abruptly out of work and had been working kind of in the group type environment for a long time. Because it's important to remember that, like, places like Game Trailers and IGN are a lot more similar to, like, older print type media than when you think of, like, modern streamers and YouTubers that are running with networks or solo. And so throwing those guys to the Vipers a little bit when Game Trailers closed was rough, because I'm sure a lot of them were kind of freaking out, like, what am I going to do? I have no experience self-publishing. I'm used to meeting deadlines, all that kind of stuff. So this is great news for them, and hopefully they're going to have great luck with their new adventure. Also, you can support Easy Allies if you want to on their Patreon account. Go ahead and make a donation. Yeah.
Why did they have to change the name? Did someone else have the rights to it?
Presumably, yeah.
Okay. It just was very clear what Game Trailers is. Easy Allies.
Well, Easy Allies is starting out with streaming content, and they're doing some live streams, I think, and just some general streaming type content. So it's not going to be the exact same thing as Game Trailers, certainly, to start out, because you have to remember they had, like, you know, a huge staff and stuff, and it was a little more established. Presumably, they're going to be launching their own versions of some of those shows, maybe, but I'm assuming it's not going to be the same thing as Game Trailers.
I see.
Which is a shame, but at the same time, it's nice to see that these guys are coming back in, still making content for us.
Yes, I'm happy for them that they get to keep working in their chosen careers, definitely. Last story of the day. This is an interesting one. Xbox has put out a survey asking players, would you be willing to trade in your digital games for 10% of their value in in-store credit? That's the long and short of it?
Nope.
What do you guys think?
Nope.
I mean, the reason why I say no is because it's not, before you were actually giving up a physical copy of something else that someone else would use. This just seems kind of ridiculous that it's something you already purchased. You're getting, I mean, I'm looking at kind of the price here. You're not even getting, like,
you're getting 10%.
Yeah. I mean, that's not much. And I don't know. I mean, I suppose some people who have a ton of games that are, aren't installed on their Xbox and they haven't played in a while. Well, maybe they'd be more than willing to do it.
How about this, Tom? An Xbox 360 exclusive without backwards compatibility that you played through once and never touched again.
Yeah, I just wonder how many of those you have, and if that.
What I wonder is how many of those you have, because that's what I'm asking. Like, is like, I can think of a couple of games that I bought back in the day that, like,
yeah,
I'd be willing to trade in. Just not my big sticking point is 10%.
Yeah,
get out of town. At least give people, like, you know, you're permanently giving it up, and you lose like presumably almost everything. Like, I hopefully they can keep your saves and stuff because they're saved to your profile, but like. That seems extreme. Like, 10% seems ridiculous.
Yeah, especially digital copies of digital console copies have not been out that long. Like, that depreciation is pretty extreme.
That said, the fact that they'd offer it at all is actually quite interesting, because I'm not exactly sure what the benefit is to them to you selling it back to them. I mean, server costs? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like they can resell. I mean, they can resell the game, but it's not like they're reselling a physical copy.
And yeah, what are they reselling? The license key? I don't understand.
I don't know that there would be a I don't know where you guys are getting the reselling thing. They're digital copies, so likely it's just you lose your license for the game.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, what the value is of losing a license, though.
You can't play it anymore.
No, I know, but why would you
want to them.
If it's a digital copy.
Right, that's what I'm saying, is that the only thing I can think of is maybe server costs?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. It seems odd, but my guess would be that they're hoping to push more people into making more digital purchases, because presumably this would be on your, Microsoft account or whatever, that you'd be getting the refund, not on, a credit card.
My only thing, would be to see if you could boost sales and other things, because for me, if I get a digital copy, I'm holding on to it.
Yeah, because even, I was thinking about playing Bioshock Infinite again, and I think I got it for, $5 a digital copy. I don't know. I just don't – I don't think it's worth it to take that away from you know, my storage, even though it may be a game I'm uninstalled and I played through it once.
Or Here's my conundrum on it. Perfect example was, remember, I think last week I was saying a game that I was playing was Blazing Angels, that old PS3 game.
Yep.
You know, you have games that you probably have on console that you haven't played in a long time. And you're like, oh, you know what? Let me bring it back. Let me do a Throwback Thursday or something. And then you have to go out and find it if you've already sold it. And I've sold physical copies because I've been short on money before. And I feel like I don't have to worry about that with a digital copy because I'm like, oh, I just have it here. Now I can just come back to it whenever I feel like it. And it's not taking up space if I don't want it to.
Now, I'll say this. One of my friends won't buy digital copies because he can't resell it at anything. I don't think he would do it for 10%, but maybe this incentivizes some people. Rather than the games that you actually already have, he may make more purchases in the future knowing that he could get a return on it.
Maybe.
Sure. Honestly, I'm most interested to hear what you guys think, because for me, this is a joke.
No,
to me, it's I have games. I play Warcraft 2 once in a while because I can run it on the same computer that, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Worry about getting the new version of the console and selling my old one or having it break down or any of that stuff with Steam. So to me, this just seems why? But I get it for console. It's got to be, like you said, specifically situations where you are in a bind monetarily or where you've upgraded and no longer own the stuff. Because for example, with this Blazing Angels game, presumably you owned a physical copy of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you then sold it when you needed money. And so, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily apply to this exact example because you couldn't turn Blazing Angels into money for anything but a video game if it was digitally purchased in this scenario.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm surprised they rolled this out now because I feel like maybe at the end of Xbox's kind of life, maybe people would be willing to do it.
But that's when they would really lose money, though.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I suppose it makes sense. And you know what? It's I'm probably not the right person to ask.
Well, plus, think about what would have happened if they announced the Xbox 360 backwards compatibility after people had traded in their entire 360 library.
That's very fair.
Did you say riots in the street?
Yeah.
Explosions?
You thought that the Kinect was bad.
Yeah, I don't know. And again, I'm one of those people. Yeah, they'll maybe a game like Tomb Raider, I may not want to go back and play, but I just go you know, I get $6 for that. I don't know.
The nice thing for a Steam account and stuff is I feel like I could be my son could play this. You know what
I mean?
Well,
although
legally I don't think that he could, but I don't know exactly
how
that shakes out.
The hard thing for me is at the end of the day, it's kind of I'm a hoarder. I tend to hoard my games. It's a lot to make me want to sell.
Sure.
And I ironically enough regret every game I've sold.
Well, I can appreciate it when it's physical copies, and I don't understand selling digital copies. It just seems really weird to me, the whole question from its base. I have to assume that the main thing would be so that young kids are spending more money on the Xbox marketplace. Because kids who would make the hard decision of selling Dark Souls 2 because they aren't going to get enough allowance to get Dark Souls 3, that kind of thing.
Yeah, or like I said, my friend who literally still buys physical copies, and I always have to remember he has to literally take it out, put it back in. You know, I'm literally hitting a button.
Right.
Back
but
in
for him, this wouldn't even be worth it because Grand Theft Auto 5 is $60 right now, and you'd get $6 if he took a physical retail copy to GameStop, he'd get $30 or $20.
$20 easy.
You certainly wouldn't get
for the PS
$6.
You get more than I think you'll get $20 for the PS3 model, I mean, for the PS3 version, and then I think 30 for the PS4.
Yeah.
I would be wondering, too, like, what it's 10% of what? The original price? The current price that it's on at in the Microsoft store? Like, what is the price being based off of? Because, like, say you have a digital game that you bought when it was $60, but you want to return it, and now it costs $20 in the store. That's $2 back.
My thing is that 10% of anything ain't enough for me to make me want to sell a digital copy.
Yeah, flat. 10% just exactly. I saw especially, the 10% balked.
Yeah, because especially given like the age of most games that are digital on console, they're not old enough to be that cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it really comes down to.
I would agree. I think that the key is that there's not much point in having a resale market when there's no used market.
Yeah, I guess that's what I was getting at in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly, and I'm with you on that because that it does strike me as odd, and I don't know how you would remarket.
Yeah, how would you?
Maybe you'd say it. Maybe if you were in a situation where they had stuff like I hate to bring it up again, but in Dragon Age the original, you had the Golem DLC that was only available if you bought a brand new copy of the game. It was like the EA Access type thing, but for BioWare.
Yeah,
and it worked. I'm glad I had the Golem because the Golem's like the best party member ever.
Yeah, he's funny.
But isn't it a she?
That's right. That's right. That was the big reveal.
But the I don't know. Like it just the whole thing just seems screwy. It's just frustrating.
Well, in other words,
because those systems are not in place, there's no real. I don't know how you'd sell a used version of something without cutting content.
And the other thing is there's a lot of opportunity for essentially rentals here, and it seems like that's really what they should be pushing is kind of the rental market, because I bet there's a lot of people who say, you know what, I'd be done with this game in a month or whatever, and so I'll get it at a cheaper rate. I'm not going to retain it, you know, or the rights to play it or whatever. And you can do that a lot easily, you know, digitally, because you don't have to use Redbox or Blockbuster.
I guess that
day.
Would work, but you'd still have to own like a console.
Right. No, that's true. Yeah.
But just because I hear where you're coming from, I feel like that would be a good, I mean, it's like Gamefly type situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right. Well, that wraps up the news, unless anybody has any last thoughts on this.
The answer is no.
Wonderful. So let's get things started with what we've been playing this week. I will go first. I have been playing, not Drive Club, but I have that in my head for some reason, but The Crew. I got it as part of the same Humble Bundle. It was the Division Humble Bundle, I believe, that it was in. And it is a lot of fun. I don't know. I've been having a blast with it. It's got car mods on the same level as, like, Saints Row, or actually it's better than that even. It's like GTA 5 level of car customization. Everything looks great. The way it runs on my system, it actually upscales it to 2 or it renders it in 2K, then downscales it to 1080p because that's my monitor can do. It's a great looking game. It runs great. It's open world, which I love. That's the, in case you guys don't remember which one The Crew is, that is the one that has the heavily condensed version of the entire US on it. And when mm-hmm. I say heavily condensed, I mean heavily. Like, it's like I think if you look at your GPS, it's 5 miles from like, like 5 miles between. No, not 5 miles across. Calm down, Tom. It's like 5 miles from Chicago to like the Twin Cities or something like that.
Huh.
So it's a weird system, but it works well because you get to hit all the cities and it takes time to get places. When I drove from, goodness gracious, I'm so bad at geography. When I drove from, what was it, Philly to Michigan, I want to say. I don't know. They had you, it was like a 10-minute drive because I didn't want to use the fast travel. And I really enjoyed it because you get to drive through the countryside, you drive past some farms, some just like rural houses and stuff. And it's just very, it's the most immersive driving game I've played. I like going in first person because I actually kind of feel like I'm driving for the first time in any driving game I've played.
Does it remind you of Cruisin' USA?
I don't know because I have not played that game.
No, I don't know. I remember it was like an original N64 and like
probably not
arcade.
At all then.
No, I just it's hard. Like I guess I'm getting at the aesthetic of it. Like I liked how you cruise through Iowa and stuff.
I sure. I think of it like I don't even know. It's
It's just an open world driving game that is inspired by the U.S. I wouldn't get it's not super duper realistic, but it's enough that you get the vibe. So maybe yes, it would scratch that itch. I really don't know.
Yeah, I was looking at rankings here. How much would you spend on it? Because most of these scores were not very good for the game.
$25.
Okay.
But I also don't have any of the DLC, and I don't feel like I need it. The DLC in this game, while I did make a big stink about how they included it in the game, it is stuff that if you're into cars, you'd be super into. It's big stuff. It's like, here's a bunch of monster trucks you can now buy. Here's motorcycles. It's stuff that it's not just like, here's a new car. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is nice. It's actually like different kinds of cars that weren't there. Cool. So I think that's neat.
Cool.
What else have you guys been playing?
I was going to play Fallout Automatron, and me being an idiot, I assumed I had the season pass. It would just be loaded in. It is not. And so there are some steps. There's a lot that went up online about how to get the add-on in there. I'm excited for that one. Other than that, nothing too new. Still the Clash Royale, which I recommend for anyone who wants a game that you can play in 3 minutes, at least each turn or whatever.
It's pretty good if a bit pay to win.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Luckily, I haven't had that itch where I'm like, okay, I need to. It's a lot of like opening chests, or
it's a lot of opening a chest and then waiting 3 to 10 hours and then opening a chest.
I had one that was 12 hours. Luckily, you can kind of load up on them. So if you like,
you can have four.
Yeah, plus you can
it's
have
not
the,
exactly loading up.
Well, no, you can have the two in the corners too.
Oh,
though.
Can you? Okay, that, yeah. See, you're probably further in than me. I had a bunch of prominent YouTubers recommend it to me before like it even launched. I downloaded it day one. I played it for like an hour and was like, oh, bummer.
Yeah, so I don't know. I still would if
like, I would recommend it if you're into tower defense games at all.
Yeah, I mean I'm enjoying it, and I'm playing Hearthstone. I'm trying to load up on gold before the Old Gods or whatever releases.
Sure.
It was kind of a down week for me. I'm trying to think of what else I played some Diablo with my friend and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm still loving that game and still loving Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat's taking up a lot of my video game time.
Nice. Well, now that you've run down your entire list.
Well, it wasn't that exciting this week.
Brandon, what have you been playing?
I haven't really played too much this week, which is kind of a shame. I did play some Blazing Angels 2, Secret World War II Files thingy, and that's just a fun game because it's just a throwback for me. And you get to fly, like, old experimental planes from World War II.
Those that don't know, Brandon's a giant dork about military planes.
And,
also ships.
Yeah.
Well, it's important. So, point being, from someone who likes these types of things historically, that's what that's the itch it's scratching for you.
And it's also fun and arcadey. Like, you always fly with a squadron, and they can heal you, and they have, like, quirky one-liners whenever they get an enemy. Oh, wow, thanks for saving my life. And you're like, yeah, I wasn't even shooting your direction. But okay. It's just a quirky little PS3 game that I fell in love with when I was in high school. So, I mean, thoroughly enjoyed it. And then that's essentially all I've really been playing this week. I've been taking
that
it a little bit light.
Is not true, because the next game I'm going to talk about that I played this week is The Division.
Oh, yeah, we did play that on the weekend, yeah.
Yes, Brandon, we played like three straight
days
of it.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, we played it quite a bit. We got 11 levels.
Oh, yeah, and it's fun on hard. I'm sorry, it really is.
Yeah, so we did our first mission like in hard mode, which it was kind of finicky. We started the mission by accident on normal mode, and it was kind of a nightmare to try and get it into hard mode. We ended up both having to log out. But once we got it all working, it was really enjoyable and challenging. So the two of us went all the way through, I think it was the level 20 mission on hard, and it was a little bit grueling, but it was really successful. Like, we got great loot, we got great experience, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because you play and you're like, oh, yeah, we can take out all these red enemies. And then we started playing the game on hard, and it was like purple everywhere.
Every single enemy is purple for elite.
What brings you back to that game? Because I see the complaints online that it feels a little empty at times. We just mentioned the Dark Zone has some issues.
Well, first of all, I'm not Dark Zone level. As I mentioned earlier, Brandon and I are waiting till 30 to go there. And also, we don't have issues with repetition because we're not max level, so all of those complaints are about the end game, and we have not reached the end game.
Okay, so
we will soon know.
I'm taking it slow because I know that when we get to the end game, we'll probably, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to log in every stinking day to do a daily quest, but at the same time, like, I also just am partially just playing it out of responsibility to you guys, because I feel like I bought it and I need to be able to talk about a relevant game. So I don't know. I'm enjoying it, but I'm mostly enjoying it from the perspective of being able to play a multiplayer game with Brandon more so than I'm enjoying it as like, oh, this game is incredible. I can't wait to play it.
No worry, we'll get another itch with Overwatch. So
yeah, exactly. And also, once we get to 30, I probably will enjoy it a bit more because it's going to be a little bit more static, and I'll be able to actually work on my character without just it being luck of the drop.
Well, yeah, that's the goal, too. Like, I want to get to 30 so I can really flesh out his gill and get him to specialize.
Indeed. Yep. I agree completely. I also finished up Far Cry Primal. It was a lot of fun. It definitely drags a bit at the end. Still recommending it if you can get it for 40 or less. But just go into it being aware that the story is not the strong point. It is the gameplay, the setting, and the fact that you can ride a saber-toothed tiger while hucking spears at dudes.
Or mammoths.
Lastly, I also, just last night, finished up Automatron, which is that new DLC we've mentioned a couple times. It's great. It's worth $10, that's for sure. It took me two nights of playing it just a little for an hour or two after work to finish it. The robot customization is huge. I would estimate there's probably like 25 or 30 customizations just for their hands.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. There's like five customizations. Like, it's the head, arms, head, left arm, right arm, left hand, right hand, chest, and legs are all customizable, plus paint job. Then every single segment of armor has between 0 and 4 additional categories that you can mod with their own subset of choices to pick from.
So this might be apples and oranges, but with the settlements, there was nothing in the game, I guess, that really, like, I mean, you really didn't have to do the settlement stuff if you didn't want to, but I found myself doing it over and over again just for the joy of it. Is customizing robots similar? I mean, do you get kind of similar
kind
vibe?
Of not really. It's a totally different, I mean, it's a workbench, first of all. Like, it's you yeah. have a special, you're just crafting it like a workstation type thing. But no, actually, I get more of like a kind of a Lego or like,
oh, okay.
like a that Lego
makes
type vibe.
That makes a lot of sense.
Like I have a lot of fun being like last night I was really proud because my first robot that I built, I did melee weapons. One had an Assaultron, an electric Assaultron hand on one arm, and it was a drill, a giant like Big Daddy looking drill on the other. Then I realized that melee is hot garbage when I kill guys as fast as I do. So I switched it out and I was super proud of myself. I like created one that uses a Mr. Handy for its legs, so it just is like a jet thruster and it just flies. And then I have two, the arms are on one side, it's a flamethrower, and the other is a cryo blaster. So it's like it shoots like, you know, the sort of spray of ice out of one and the spray of fire out of the other, and just flies around the battlefield owning dudes. It's super cool. I'm enjoying it quite a bit. There was a little bit of wasted potential with a particular character who I won't spoil, but I was a little bummed that that was not an available companion, or maybe unless I missed something. But overall, it's cool. It adds at least one companion. It adds a fun, quirky story, and the robot customizations seem pretty cool. I can't wait to see what happens when modders get their hands on the customization, because there's going to be thousands of... There's already probably a couple million possible combinations with just the existing stuff, but once you add in mods, it's going to be just infinite, and I'm pretty stoked for it.
What's with the Codsworth with legs? Like,
you can mod Codsworth fully. You can mod all robots.
No, that's just funny. I saw online people were making a big deal about.
I might actually use Codsworth, although I don't know if he's going to keep judging me. The new playable, the new companion, Ada or ADA, is pretty cool though. I like her because she doesn't seem to have an opinion on you at all. Nice. I don't have to worry about her liking me or not. Although I don't think she has a unique perk that I've seen, but she does like. Basically, she'll say things like, there's an enemy detected, or she'll say, like, there's something there on the ground. Like, she has actually helpful little dialogue things. Downside being, she does not seem to comment on the greater wasteland story. So it's, like, her dialogue seems to be limited to miscellaneous small talk and the story missions of Automatron, which is not super long. Oh, it also adds a, well, I'm not going to tell you that, but it adds something else pretty cool too. Overall, highly recommend it for $10, or if you have the season pass, just go ahead and download it. Just remember that both on Xbox, as Tom is saying, and also on PC, as I understand it, if you have the season pass, you may have to install it separately. On Steam, all you have to do is select it in your library, and then you'll see add-ons in the middle of the screen, and you just right-click. It'll say not installed next to Automatron. Just right-click it and say install, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I'll play
it. It's only
next...
like 500 megabytes, so don't worry about the size.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll play it next week and give my opinion as well.
Definitely, and I'll be messing around with it some more because I have not collected all of the parts. I guess I should mention that one last thing. It has kind of a little Pokemon element to it as well, which is when you're killing the new kinds of robots they added, you are they have a chance to drop mods that are the parts that you're using to build robots. And for a lot of them, the first time that you cannot craft it on your own until you have picked it up at least once. So I'm going to be going back through those dungeons. Hopefully they will respawn, going back through those to try and collect the rest of the pieces. In particular, I need a ding, sentry bot, left arm, and head.
There is no multiplayer, right? You can't, like, customize one and then fight someone else?
No.
That'd
it's
be
Bethesda.
So
this is Bethesda.
That'd be fun.
It's Fallout.
It was wishful thinking.
Fallout.
Anyways, though, what you can do is fight it with fight them with, you know, other NPCs and robots in the game, which is fun enough, in my opinion. Especially because, let's be honest, companions have never been huge powerhouses anyways.
Yeah.
I never have walked into, like, an encounter in Fallout and gone, all right, I'm just going to stand back here and let my companion do the work. Because 2 minutes later, they'll be on the ground sobbing and everybody just turns to you at once. And
or
it's terrifying.
They'll find a corner.
Yes, exactly.
They'll find a corner to get stuck in.
But yeah, that pretty much does it. I'm trying to think. I want to say there was one more minor game that I also played Oxenfree this week.
Huh.
How was that?
It was good. It's an indie point-and-click game. I don't know how to describe this game. It's
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a game, and I can't talk about it too much because I don't want to spoil anything, but it's a game about a mysterious island with a mystery that these five teenagers go to. It's got some time travel type elements to it, and it is just a very cool game. I highly recommend it. It has tons of endings, and apparently, like, all kinds of additional stuff. Like, there's an alternate reality game that's being associated with it, with like phone numbers you can call and like stuff you have to take pictures of and all this. It's pretty cool. It's the hotness on like Reddit and stuff right now. So I recommend it. It's a cool game. So yeah, check that out as well. That's Oxenfree.
Nice.
Also, it has gorgeous graphics.
Nice.
All right. That pretty much does it. Sorry, does anybody else have any other games they got to play or anything this week?
There was one game I looked into lightly. It was called Battlefleet Gothic, which is a Warhammer 40K RTS spacefaring game.
Fart noise.
That was Henry saying I'm a Warhammer 40K fan.
Hey, so am I. Let's be clear here. I had two armies in the tabletop game. I'm just not a fan of the video games.
Yeah, so I thought it was a pretty that game's running off the Unreal 4 engine. It'll be available in late April. It looks good, but the developer has a history of not making good games.
Whoa, so, a Games Workshop IP being developed by an inexperienced developer? Color me shocked.
So I kind of got my hopes up, and they got dashed in less than 24 hours.
For sure. Well, if you are a fan of Warhammer Warhammer games, you may want to check out the current Humble Sega Strategy Bundle. It is featuring some pretty cool games. It's got Company of Heroes Complete Edition, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War Master Collection, Medieval 2 Total War Collection, Rome Total War Collection, the Sega Genesis Mega Drive Strategy Pack, which has Shining Force, Shining Force 2, and two games I've never heard of, Gain Ground and Columns, which I'm sure are all classics. And then you get 10% off the first-time subscribers get 10% off Humble Monthly. Excuse me. You also get Valkyria Chronicles, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War 2, the Grandmaster Collection,
dun, dun, dun.
East Side Hockey Manager, whatever the hell that is,
Total War Shogun 2, Fall of the Samurai Collection, and then you can also get Total War Attila and Company of Heroes 2 Master Collection. So, specifically, if you missed them, Warhammer 40K Dawn of War and Dawn of War 2's Master Collections are both available. Master for Dawn of War and Grandmaster for Dawn of War 2 are both available right now in the Humble Bundle if you pay $668 or more at the time of recording. So, yeah. Check that out, and as always, there will be more games added on Tuesday. However, that is going to bring this episode to a close. As always, this show has been procedurally generated. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Please be sure to check us out on Audioboom and iTunes to leave a rating or review. You can also follow us on Twitter at @PG_show. Thanks, and as always, game on.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.